This is an example of speech.
All our history of broiling wars.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge. Thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle blow hard, evergreen topical heatwave of an ongoing conversation, turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comments section in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. To listen to the archives, go to stoneduckmedia.com or tellmewhattothink.com. You can contact us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. I'm Peter Elbro. You can contact me on Twitter at BloatedNemesis. And I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at green_weird, which is spelled W-Y-R-D. This episode, we tell you what to think about social media and information warfare, part 2. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think.
Fighting over against the sell cocaine is just incontrovertibly insane propagation of the Old Voice Network. Decision signed with a shake and a smirk.
Alright, we are recording. Yeah, yeah, by the time most people hear this, the Mueller report will be out. I imagine there are bands of angry people in the streets. I just don't know what color hats they have on.
Is it pink and red? Is that the division?
like the pussy hats?
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know. I've never seen a study on this, but I get an impression, and it's... I mean, odds are, just because Democrats are majority female, that the kind of, like, hardcore resistance, and I don't necessarily mean hashtag resistance, but it would include that, to Trump is kind of female-centric. Like, a lot of the activism since he became president, I think, is centered around, like, communities of women. I get the impression, at least.
And that's great.
Yeah, like, I mean, it wasn't Trump, per se, but remember in Madison here, after Evers was elected, I definitely got the impression that the resistance against Walker and the state Republicans was female-centered.
Well, because a lot of it was teachers who were, of course, disproportionately female.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the party is, they're kind of base, kind of sub-organizations, like Teachers Union. Even a fair amount, I mean, I haven't counted it up, but at least it seems like a majority of the representatives who were active from the Democrats were females. I don't even remember a male one, to be honest, that was, like, speaking out and being vocal, at least. Yeah, except for the guy, Erpenbacher, he's always cool.
All right. So, what are we talking about this week, Pete?
I think we were going to talk about a subject we've done in the past and kind of dive back into it. Social media and information warfare.
It's such a fertile topic. It refreshes with every campaign cycle.
Yeah. I was thinking this morning, though, how much does it matter?
I mean,
like, does it affect
elections?
If it
mattered in 2016, it's going to matter a bunch more in 2020.
Did it matter in 2016?
I guess.
Did we go 1 minute without litigating that election? relitigating?
Well, the only reason I want to say whether or not it matters is because those tactics and, you know, the rule of escalation, especially in weaponry, what we've seen the tactics in Doug Jones with that Democratic group trying to basically do what the Russians were doing to see if it would work. And then we saw similar operations in 2018, and now there are signs on the internet already that I've seen that certain groups on either respective side are already ramping up their operations and preparing.
Yeah.
So be careful with who you follow, people.
Or have follow you. Although, I don't know. Does that matter as much? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure.
I block them. When I have someone that follows me that has all the signs of being a bot, and then I, like, go on... I don't have it on... But it's like this bot checker thing developed by some university. And then I put it into there, and if it gets a high score, I just block. I don't know. Bots make me uneasy. Yeah, it's just a difference of... just makes me, like, uncomfortable. Well, okay, I mean, am I... So, okay, first, does any of this affect elections? I mean, it's really in vogue in, like... which, like, ironic, or not ironically, in old media, like TV and papers, of course papers are online, to, like, be like, the Twitter political discussion is not the real world. You know, on Twitter, this seems to be have a big impact, but in the real world, it has this polling impact. And
but they report that every day.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, and then, like, you know, no one... in power says that, like, shit mattered in 2016.
Yeah.
So, I mean, does that mean it did matter? Is that too cynical and conspiratorial? Or is it just, it kind of matters, and when things are kind of, people pick one side or another?
Okay. Well, so let's, again, preface this discussion of whether or not it mattered, and remember that, okay, so the basis of the allegations is that the GRU or some part of the Russian government or its archipelago of interests and groups tried to sway the election here in America or tried to affect it. It's like, you know, the whiplash pattern, making God bleed just to prove that it's vulnerable and flawed. In this case, there's a domestic Russian interest because Vladimir Putin and his, shall we say, oligarchy at best, political state, wants people to believe that democracy is not necessarily good or not necessarily to be trusted because they do better when people don't show up.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, honestly, like, who hasn't at least questioned democracy where it's like, really? Did a few bots, did they?
I mean, we could just point to, like, people like Kathy Niklaus, who provably changed the campaign's outcome, or at least tried to.
Yeah, I'm surprised I haven't heard of more, like political scientists at universities crunching some numbers and at least throwing out theories of the case, as if it worked or not. I'm sure there has been something, but I haven't really run across it, and I keep an eye out for things like that.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, is there a trust in democracy? I mean, there's always constant polling. People continue to seemingly trust democracy.
Yeah, I mean,
not based on participation.
I mean, it'll take, yeah. I remember in the movie, the one of my favorite movies, Slacker, there's a guy who they're going to visit, and he's left his apartment, he's moved away, and he leaves this little manifesto, and it talks about how the greatest political force in America is the non-voter, and it's their removal from the self-removal from the system that speaks the loudest. I mean, it's not. I on one hand I agree, on the other hand I don't completely get how it works, the mechanisms through this protest. But anyway, yeah, I think there's clearly a apathy towards democracy.
Right. Not a general frustration process.
Yeah.
And maybe people don't see or understand their interests in it, but I don't know. There's a lot of factors that keep people from voting.
Yeah. Okay, so
reality of it.
And almost how, like, you know, there's the total amount of eligible voters, and then there's, you know, like a fraction of that vote. There seems to be a fraction of that who at least at the bare minimum politically engaged by voting who are kind of active, even activist in some way, you know, through... Well, and I think that group has expanded with social media. I wonder if it's become less effective, though, than, like, 30 years ago, people politically organizing.
Well, and we also have to, considering we're, you know, talking about social media platforms, we also have to consider the bias of the platform. Like, you know, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, they all focus in their own relative and distinct ways on certain groups of influencers and people who are who they think, rightly or wrongly, are on the inside of whatever message or movement that they represent and need to have, and their voices get thus amplified or, you know, muted, depending.
Yeah. I'm reminded of, there was a revolutionary in the 1848 revolutions in Paris who was, like, really against, like, mass demonstrations and, like, against power of the people, even though notionally he was trying to reform the system to help people. I mean, I think he was, like, an anarcho-socialist or something. And anyway, but he viewed that the mechanism by which you complete a revolution is by a small group of dedicated, ideologically focused and, like, well-trained revolutionaries.
The vanguard.
Yeah, yeah. And they were very unsuccessful until they started infiltrating more populist, democratic, you know, organizations, and then actually were able to get a group of people together. It's just like a funny note of history. It's like once they saw their opportunity, they're like, eh, we always said that window isn't good, but we're going to go through it because it's open.
Huh. They were worried about people interfering with what they were trying to accomplish, basically.
Yeah, but then once they saw, well, this is our easiest way to do something.
To get some hands on a lever.
Yeah, and so, but that mentality of, like, kind of getting to the center of influence and influencing that, like, working from within, whether, I mean, usually people say work from within when it's, like, something they're sort of opposed to.
Sure.
But it works just as well for something you are not opposed to and you just want to have greater influence on its direction.
Right, like the progressive wave in 2018.
And I think it's hard to say that there's not some influence from, I mean, come on, there's like all these journalists and politicians on there, on Twitter and probably Facebook too.
Mm-hmm. Instagram. I'm not on Instagram.
Definitely, yeah, Instagram, yeah.
I mean, podcasts don't make for a very visual media.
Yeah. But, I mean, so, I don't know, what's been, have you noticed anything different?
Well, I think this year the deployments are happening a lot faster and ahead of the cycle, much like the announcements. I mean, I've seen, like, so many people comment on, like, bots, obvious bots of, like, people with, like, hundreds, they're following hundreds, but only have, like, dozens of followers.
Yeah, yeah. Or, and they're following, or a magnitude or two more than that.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they'll start becoming influential in the echo chamber in, like, a matter of months, more than they are already.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, it seems like people are more, like, aware of it, though.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's...
Well, I guess people are becoming more cynical about the messenger, which is not the worst.
It's also not the best.
Not the best.
I mean, if you have bad messengers, sure, but it doesn't prepare you for good messengers.
Well, I mean, MSNBC kind of destroyed their own reputation in the past couple of years, but, you know, we'll play that fun game at the end of the episode.
Yeah, they've kind of, I mean, I don't know, did any of them have a reputation?
What, Rachel Maddow? The Rhodes Scholar?
Well, I mean, I feel weird taking the position of, like, being cynical about Rachel Maddow, because I'm not really, but, like, I also am not too high on what her TV career, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm pretty skeptical of, like, TV journalists, there's just few and far between that are worth much to me. But as someone who doesn't watch a ton of TV news, that just might be why. I don't know. Chicken and egg there.
Like, TV news has become less valuable. I mean, it's partly competition because there are other voices but also I think once people get so much money, they start losing, I guess, relevance in their considerations of what's news to the average person. If you know what I mean? Like, once you have $1 million, you're more interested in what stock buybacks are coming out rather than, like, Amazon raising their minimum wage to $15 an hour and Walmart doing the same.
Yeah, I mean, I think that sort of thing has a weight on people. But I don't think it's, like, cut and dry, black and white. I mean, because that's, like, the argument people, which it's, like, I don't want to get down a huge rabbit hole of this because I just think it's all stupid. But, sure. But like, the Bernie thing with his tax returns.
Yeah, being a billionaire.
Like, who thought he was, like, poor?
Well, there's a lot of moving goalposts there, too.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, so his tax, he finally provided his taxes, and that's not good enough. He's not providing enough to charity. Okay, I mean, we can just keep stomping on potentially the first Jewish president's finances. But let's talk policy.
Yeah. But all I mean is that, like, I don't think... Cause, so I was actually just a little while ago saw, like, a little... Because I didn't watch that town hall he did on Fox News. Talk about interesting, though, information warfare, though, kind of going into the belly of the beast. I don't know.
That's great, right?
And
I mean, you don't attack people where you are. You attack them where they are.
Yeah. I think there are...
or at least reach out to them. I guess attack is a strong word.
I saw a criticism from that Mehdi Hassan, who's pretty cool. And yeah. He's like, yes, it's fine and good in, like, the short term that people like Buttigieg or Bernie go on Fox News, but, you know, there is a sort of long-term cost to legitimizing them, which I once heard that Roger Ailes was actually a lot of the journalistic integrity of Fox News actually went away after Roger Ailes left, because even though he created a culture of disinformation, lower integrity, and having this purpose-driven journalism, he insisted that there had to be some, you know, retractions and good sourcing and all, you know, like the normal things, because if they didn't have any of that, they could never become a big influencer.
They just stuck in that propaganda niche.
And after apparently he left, it was just like the floodgates were open for just not giving a shit. And it's like, to me, it's like, well, I didn't notice a difference, but I also don't watch them a lot, and, you know. So, yeah, anyways, I mean, is Bernie, though, is he, like, just because he has whatever money he has now? Like, I think it's ridiculous to say that he can't be a voice of, you know, who he says he's a voice for.
Sure. I mean, if you read the book that he wrote that made him so rich, he's pretty strident in his opinions about equality and, you know, wealth distribution. So, I don't know. It's like, are you supposed to hate the messenger because his message was so successful? That seems like such a... I mean, it's an obvious attack against him.
But it seems they're all attacks.
Yeah, it seems a little disingenuous.
But, I mean, you were saying that, like, you know, if there's some sort of TV journalist who strikes it rich and...
Well, sure, but they're making millions of dollars per year distributing what is potentially propaganda. Like, the only thing that Bernie's fucking wealth inspires me to do is write a book.
Yeah, I suppose.
Like, he's just had, I mean, if anything, it's proven that he's had a long and honest career.
But in the end, you're judging by, like, the thing that's important in the end is what they're advocating, not why right. They're advocating.
I mean, it's just one of, like, another variable to consider. Like, you have to consider
sure. Yeah.
The person who's the message and the person saying the message.
That's, yeah.
I mean, occasionally I find myself agreeing on at least an intellectual or, you know, very, shall we say, finite ideas with people I would otherwise despise, but that doesn't make me despise them less.
Yeah, the only time I could think of something like that, you know, hey, again, thinking of information warfare and Fox News, is when, this has kind of been a thing recently, I don't know if you've heard of this, but Tucker Carlson has been, like really kind of going all in on that sort of Trump during the campaign type populist rhetoric. You know, like, what's with these elites taking all of our money? Maybe we have had 40 years of, you know, economic policies that have been shitting on the little guy. I mean, but to him, he's like, it's only white people. And yeah. He was that guy.
Right? You're a Vanderbilt, bro. Or, no, he isn't. That's Tucker Carlson.
He comes from, goddamn, it's like his stepmom is... like a Swanson.
Oh, right. He's from the Swanson family. Yeah.
It
was in Food Magazine.
But yeah, I mean, dude was wearing a bow tie talking about conservative economics for most of his career.
Yeah. And it's that red-brown line, which is another point we need to discuss in information warfare. The weakness that, you know, it's like the reasons why you have to be careful with who you follow or who follows you, because just like that, you know, the broken clock, the two instances I agree with somebody I despise is, shall we say, the yeah. opening that lets you, like, think, oh, well, maybe I'll listen to more of this guy. Yeah. And if you already go in with, like, oh, I really agreed with him on that point, so I'm open and already, you know, automatically kind of agreeing with the things that he says. And that's, again, very dangerous.
Yeah, man, sometimes I will be, I'll be going through my Twitter feed, and I'll see some tweet, and I'm like, oh my god, what an awful, you know, opinion, or stance, or observation, and oh god, why am I following this person?
Yeah.
And then occasionally I can, oh yeah, I think this person once said, blah, you know, mm-hmm. such and such, and wow, okay.
Yeah, so again, be careful, because some people... like, if, even though they're anti-imperialist, there's a difference between anti-imperialist and anti-authoritarian. They are two distinct and different variables. And you should be both anti-imperialist and anti-authoritarian.
All right. Hey, done. Consider it done.
Like, and the difference is, like, so if you're anti-imperialist, you would reject, you know, international intervention in Syria. But if you're anti-authoritarian, you should be in favor of it because Bashar al-Assad is perhaps one of the worst dictators in the world.
It's interesting that the example you brought up is a balancing test.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you easily could have just pointed out just now two very black and white different examples of each, but yeah, applying it to the same place.
You have to apply it, or else, I mean, it's the same variable, it should be considering the same case, because if you try to apply one variable to one case and words trying to come out at the same time, to take the concurrent variable and to make it consider a different case in isolation, you're not considering the relationship between those two variables.
Yeah, you don't have an equation at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, which is why when I look at the world and think about politics and news and all of that, it's always the sticky situations like that where I'm balancing two different fundamental values that are the toughest.
Mm-hmm.
And then I may, you know, waver on. And that's part of my sympathy for, like, I'm very skeptical of a leader. To me, the one thing I respect about leaders, political leaders, military leaders, things like that, even business leaders at times, is just the tough decisions that they are going to, mm-hmm. like, you can't do perfectly.
Right.
You're not writing a novel here where you get to perfectly construct it and have the tight ending. You will fuck up.
Right? And even then we're going to be upset with how George R.R. Martin ends the Son of Life.
Well, it's because he made it too much like life. He made it too complex.
Huh.
There will be... Although he doesn't... Yeah, anyway, we shouldn't get that.
And yeah, and it's then to get to your point, it's like the person with a good idea and the execution of it. Like, for in some respects, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez exemplifies what that should look like. She's pretty well educated about economics, and she executes her ideas in Congress, and her role is in her oversight and legislative role. I mean, the politics, it can be argued that she's perhaps having some problems with, but, you know, it's...
She's up against...
entrenched interests.
Her and Omar have been picked out, like, in their minds. I think they're wrong on this, but in their minds, Fox News has picked them out like weak antelope in a herd. And in their mind, those are the ones we pick off and feast on.
Honestly, I don't think it's even that. I mean, they may project like they're afraid of, like, the loathe and those people and think that they're weak, but they're not picking on them because they're weak. They're picking on them because they're strong counterexamples of the narrative that they're trying to push.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that a lot, and there's clearly something to it.
There's easier people to attack in Congress. Like, there are genuine outright buffoons on both sides you can, you know, clown on all day, but Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, Mark Pocan, and some of, maybe not Mark Pocan, but some of them are really not the people to clown on.
There's definitely a fear of the other supplanting your identity's power in some way, but I feel like there is just like there is a genuine condescension. There's a genuine feeling amongst at least a part of all of them, or a part of them, that feels as if a young woman of color is not like they, you know how they always say how she's stupid, right? Like, that's like a really common thing. Mm-hmm. I don't think they say that because they think she's smart. And I think they're wrong, and I think it's purely their bigotry that this is arising from. They can't view the world other than their colored glasses.
Well, and you can't really take their attacks as, like, connected to reality.
No.
They're especially attacking her for real reasons, but the attacks have, like, no basis in reality, so that's, you know, why we can tell it's a naked partisan assault that should be ignored.
I mean, and, you know, but I think, to your point, they also aren't, like, they may be bigoted people who can't see parts of reality, but they aren't stupid necessarily, and they do see that someone like AOC has a strong base of support, has inspired people to action, and that embodiment of them does. I mean, they do worry. I mean, that's like the oldest thing in like corporatocracy, is worried about, you know, the people uniting and.
Mm-hmm.
Throwing off their shackles and unionizing and all that.
Or just choosing not to buy their product anymore.
But I think like a absolute monarch king, they do view themselves as fundamentally different than their commoner opponents. That's my impression of
mm-hmm.
Fox News types. You know, the billionaires and the millionaires supported by the billionaires.
The billionaires and the millionaires who enable them.
But that being said, too, I mean, I think everyone kind of has their own reasons. You know, like, one thing I have found on the battlegrounds of social media is how people rarely have all of... It's like 80% of Republicans agree about everything. Well, how can I put this? 80% of Republicans agree about 80% of the same things, but those differences make it difficult to then make assumptions. But then maybe they're being disingenuous about what they believe. Like, when I get into these arguments online, like, they're like, "Whoa, don't assume that about me." I shouldn't.
Well, I mean, you gotta have to. I mean, you make assumptions based on who they say they support, and like, you know, if, I don't know.
I've gotten into a number of spats online with people who are like super, in my view, racist and immigrant, or whatever, anti-intellectual, religious, or something. But then they're like, "I didn't support Trump." I'm like, okay. Okay, good for you. And then they're like, they just take a, it's purely cynicism. It actually bothers me more. they take whatever stupid position is most convenient for a stupid person to take, and there's like no consistency with it, and it just, and then they always think they're the smart ones because of that.
Dunning-Kruger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's it. So has anyone been particularly bad on social media, you know, in terms of the political landscape?
Well, I mean, Neera Tanden's getting dragged again.
For supporting... Wait, let me guess, because I don't even know. Wait, let me guess. Something about Ilhan Omar?
No.
Oh, okay.
Precisely. Bernie Sanders issued a letter against her group, US, or what is their group? Sorry. I need the name in front of me.
It's the Progressive Center for...
Oh, the Center for American Progress.
Center for American Progress.
Yeah. Like, he... Because in 2016, it is known that her and Tom Watson and other people connected to her... shall we say, interfered with the election in their own respects. Not exactly Russian troll farms, but, you know, they had their own bot networks, like Sally Albright and other, shall we say, operatives. And so he sent out an open letter saying, hey, this is bullshit, we need to avoid this. And so, and she responded, but I will say this about this whole cycle of... accusations and counter-accusations is that it brings up, every time this happens, is that everybody's dirty laundry gets brought up again. And Neera Tanden, did you know that in, what was it, 2007, she hit Faik Shakur, who's currently Bernie Sanders' campaign manager?
I'm sorry, she hit him?
Yeah, like physically hit him in the chest.
That's not very effective information warfare.
Yeah, he was editor at Think Progress, and in an interview with Hillary Clinton, he asked her about the Iraq War, and Neera Tanden literally hit him in the chest and asked, "Who the fuck do you think you are?"
Well, like in front of Hillary Clinton?
Yeah, it's naked partisan fucking hackery. So, yeah, again, watch, be careful who you follow and who you're following. Or who's following you.
You know, it's interesting how that, you know, that may be an example of some stuff being a little effective, although I think it would have been a multi-front offensive, or defensive, if you will, but, like, I don't remember the Iraq War being a big deal in the 2016 primary.
Ugh. It should have been a disqualifying issue. I mean, the effects of the Iraq War influenced the election, but it wasn't a talking point, which is...
Well, of course. To the former, of course, yeah.
Right. Precincts that lost people were more likely to vote for Trump, so even though they didn't talk about it, other people were talking about it.
Well, yeah, he lied and said he was against it when he could have just stuck to some sort of talking point of like, hey, I didn't vote for it. But
right.
But so maybe, you know, there was a concerted media strategy, because I mean that was a big deal in the 2008 primary. Like Obama had that over her.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she could have hit him back. Well, I mean, unfortunately, she couldn't hit him back on the parts of his record that, you know, were hittable because she was even worse.
Like
the
financial
community. Yeah.
Also, she was trying to play. Well, I guess to what you're saying, yes, her record was worse, but she was trying to play as the more right candidate, you know, in that primary. It's where she didn't lean into her strength in 2016.
No, she didn't.
And it sort of made... I mean, like, she's... I don't know. Yeah, whatever. So, okay. So, Neera Tanden's been...
in the news.
Throwing some flubs out there.
Jennifer Palmieri, of course.
Who's that? That sounds familiar.
Another, she's a former White House director of communications for Hillary Clinton's campaign.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, she's... Like, these partisan... It's just partisan hackery, man. These people who supported an obviously failing candidate and continue to support her need to rectify their own position with reality.
Okay. The latter part of that statement is the most interesting to me. What is with this? Is it just, like, personal loyalty? I mean, which has its problems, but... I don't get why it'd be partisan hackery... Sorry. I don't get why partisan hackery leads to someone still being, like, a devotee of Hillary Clinton. Like, shouldn't it be in defense of Joe Biden or no, whomever?
Whomever, right?
But whomever who's running.
Yeah. I mean, even Peter Dow has, like, since seen the light. And these people are still fighting over 2016 over and over again. Like, the Never Bernie crowd is, like... There was an article, yesterday in the New York Times about it? How they're rallying their forces, so to speak? To make sure that the obvious front-runner doesn't get the nomination?
Yeah, I mean... In that light, though, that makes more sense to me. It just in the view of... It's, like, based in the present? Or future, even? But, as much as I may disagree with it, but, like, I don't get why...
But the basis of their decision is partisan hackery.
Okay, yeah. I might differ semantically with you a bit in that I think it's not partisan enough.
Like, okay, go on.
Well, I just mean, like, if it was truly just partisan, it would... Like, you wouldn't have a... you wouldn't have a Never Bernie, or back then, a Never Hillary, or a Never Trump. Like, a true partisan would not say never.
Sure. And that's, it's like a factionalism within partisanship.
Yeah, it's fact... There you go. Factional is a better word for me. Because, like... And that shit can be...
Dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up that guy running against Trump. I mean, he's going to be needing some some bot networks here, right? Maybe sure. We can help him. Maybe we can be hired as social media consultants I probably shouldn't be saying this publicly.
gmwttpod@gmail.com if you are interested in these services.
Infiltrate his campaign, then do an expose on political...
What, for Trump? It's completely unnecessary. All you have to do is just sound that, like, golden or brass, probably, Never Trump horn, and hopefully they'll come in from the countryside.
Yeah, but the thing is that... So the Never Trumpers are... It's debatable, but as little as 1% of Republicans, as high as maybe...
That's how many have principles? That's sad.
Maybe 10? I don't know. But they don't seem to... Like, they seem to have a inverse influence on the rest of the party. Like, fucking people like Conway or Bill Kristol and those types... Like, they seem to have, it's just like, the more they say, the more the other people are, like, supporting of Trump.
Well, it's the Carl Rove discipline that he instilled in the party. They get their talking points probably every morning in an email blast, and that's the party line. If you don't like it, you can stop cashing the checks, because they'll certainly stop coming.
It's also Karl Rove, a little bit delusional at times. Like,
I mean, that's, yeah.
Was it 2012 when he, like, wouldn't believe the election results that had Obama winning? He was, like, live on TV. And he was like, no, I'm getting word that Obama's losing Ohio. And the Fox News hosts are like, dude, he won Ohio.
That's live information warfare right there. He's repeating genuine facts on live TV.
Yeah, that's... I think that's when they have their best chance, though. That's why I think for... In terms of, like, speech-making, like, Trump's been able to... Like, he can give a speech. No one's stopping him from doing his lying during it. It's hard to live fact-check. It's possible, but it is hard. It takes resources. And by the time anyone's showing clips shitting on him, his network supporting him already has the pro-Trump propaganda out there.
Or they've moved on to some other point, like how some nice lady from Minnesota is somehow associated with one of the worst crimes that's perpetrated on America.
What a fucking organized, concerted thing this has been.
Yeah, it's fucking disgusting.
It's like, for any of their okay. Is there organization in the information warfare realm against Trump and has been since probably the election? Yes, on some level there has been. Is it nefarious? I don't know. But I do know that I certainly have not gotten the memo, and mostly what I see are people who became severely depressed and activist after his election, and they just are screaming into the darkness. This shit with, like, Dan Crenshaw, Fox News, Jacob Wohl going to Minnesota, like, 2 months ago.
Ugh.
It's been, like, this is not, it does not strike me as anything organic at all.
I mean, well, it's just astroturfing, especially Jacob Wohl. That guy is, like, one of the premier conservative astroturfers. Like, he didn't actually need security, he... Oh, man. Did you follow any of the media surrounding that?
A little, not the ins and outs, but
its face. Like, he had to walk around with security in fucking Minneapolis. My dude, I do not believe you.
No, he's complete. It's about as stupid of a. It's like a Trump University level scam in terms of how it's just on its surface. It's stupid. It doesn't make it. Actually, I'd say Trump University makes way more sense because, like. Unless you, at that time, knew much about him, you know, I could see thinking, well, maybe there is a... I could learn something about buying and selling real estate or something, you know.
I mean, somebody with experience at it should notionally be good at it.
He should have something to teach me. Turns out he didn't, but he's like, you know, he should. To think that it, like, people in Minnesota, like... Okay, Minnesota has been mostly blue for a few elections, for many elections, but, like, there's a ton of, like, Michelle Bachmann comes from, like, just outside of the Twin Cities, right?
Yeah, the Minneapolis suburbs are harshly conservative.
And as far as crazy conservative, like, some of the craziest conservatives we have seen in our lifetime have come from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's and supposedly the inner city of that area is a no-go zone. I mean,
I'm sure there's a couple neighborhoods that, like, Michelle Bachmann types don't, like, walk around in, because it's like, that's where all the Somali refugees are from.
Right, they can't read all the Arabic script, but...
But they know it's not some sort of... the fucking Mogadishu in 1993 or something.
Right, those areas are unfortunately heavily policed, so you would think that that would lend some measure of safety and security to their feelings, but it instead does the opposite, apparently.
Yeah, and if it's being so heavy policed, the very least these white people could do is go walk around it.
Right? Yeah. It just shows how racist it is.
But yeah, so he's having a ridiculous... I mean, Minneapolis, oh my god, it's so stupid. It's like... Minneapolis is one of those cities where I'm kind of like... It feels nicer than anywhere I've lived.
Yeah.
I mean, I hung out a little bit in St. Paul, and I can kind of see something that approaches what I'm used to, but, like, I don't know. It's laughable, and people gave him money, right?
Ugh.
Does he even have an idea? Like, do you think people like that? I go back and forth on this. And you could even say this about the fucking president. But, like, are they in it? Like, do they believe any of their bullshit? Or are they just scammers?
I think it's just a scam. It's got to be, right? I mean, if you had any principles, you wouldn't do that kind of immoral work, which is immoral on its face. So,
yeah. But I mean, is it like also like win-win for them? Is it like the makers of the Trump bear? Did they like Trump? Or,
well, I mean, maybe, but I guess that's a good question. Does it really matter?
I don't know. I think it matters in terms of goals, and goals matter in terms of where you are headed or where you are leading people, I guess. So I once remember this. There's the, I believe it's three categories of fake news, getting back to social media and information warfare. There was the, there's like the clearly ideological bullshit, like Breitbart, okay?
Sure.
Then there's the, like, what Trump says is fake news, but is real news. And then there's...
propaganda.
And then there is the weird clickbait that is genuinely, purely clickbait. And they might put headlines out there that might be destructively aimed at a political figure, but seem to, by people who have researched this, be just clickbait. Because they're the same ones that, check out this 700-pound lady and stuff like that.
Sure.
And they do not have a motivation other than scamming and self-interest. And so I wonder, like, on social media and in the political sphere, if someone who is ideologically aligned in terms of the scams they're putting out there, if they just gen... Because, like, if you did believe in your bullshit, like, let's say Jacob Wohl is a conservative... And genuinely believes that stuff and thinks the world would be better that way. Why is he scamming his people?
I would like to point out, we already discussed in this episode how about only 1% of Republicans actually have principles, so... And they're supportive, never Trump, or, you know...
Yeah.
But, and so that leads me to believe, I don't think any of these people on that side, or on really any side, like, especially the partisans who... are willing to engage in propaganda, really believe in what they're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, and you could say this for, you know, like that dude on Funder or whatever, at Funder.
Oh, God, that fuck. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, he's a similar version.
Yeah, same difference.
I feel as if it's more expansive on that side, but that doesn't mean it doesn't happen on the other side.
Sure.
There's not... You can't have a population as big as... the millions of people who identify with one party or another and not have gullible people.
And, man, it's just the messenger and message thing. Because, like, okay, so say you think that those principles... how do I want to say this? Yeah, disregard that point, I guess.
Okay.
I was trying to say how to explain these people are fucksticks, but, you know, they're obviously fucksticks and grifters, so...
You mean how to like, sort of call them out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's like a... Okay, that's a good segue, you know, further into social media and information warfare. Yeah. Is that... Because on one hand, can you call someone out? Can you effectively... you know, efficiently and effectively tell others that this bot or account or person is a fraud. But then...
Or banal or whatever the problem is.
But then also, does anyone care?
Yeah, that's the other part. Does anybody care?
Yeah, or do enough people, you know, care? Because... like, I ran across, I think it's actually my pinned tweet on Twitter right now, is I got into it with some bot hub account. And clearly, like, there's literally an article I found online calling out this account on Twitter. Like, I was, like, starting to do research, and I'm like, oh, shit, someone has looked into this person's account and wrote an expose on them. Wow. Awesome. And I think when I linked to that, that person kind of stopped interacting with me. But, sure. You know, expectedly so. But I forgot where I was going with this. What were we talking about? Oh, calling them out. Yeah, like, did anyone who follows that was in that thread and saw me call them out care? Or do they just like, yeah, well, this is an awesome robot super account that is on my side?
Mm-hmm.
Like, welcome in our robotic overlords? Or, like, as long as you are, they're your party?
Side. The enemy of my enemy, right?
I don't even know if it's the... Well, yeah, I suppose, yeah. The enemy, yeah, yeah. And it just feels like it's an ally. It's a willing ally.
It's a, yeah, and a willing alliance with what... with an ideology, which is just problematic. Not necessarily problematic, but I guess the part of the tactics are problematic. Like, being willing to let someone even use a bot on your side should not be okay.
Yeah, and so a lot of this, if not all of it, like, you can't hack, you know, and stuff like that, but, you know, it's not illegal to pay some company to create 10,000 bots for you to right. spread what? A message, right? That's no, that's legal.
Yeah, and if you do it overseas, then you can really skirt the law.
So, should this be illegal, or should it just be grounds for being ostracized from polite society?
What, the propaganda and bot networks?
Well, I mean, propaganda in and of itself is a little hard to define, and, you know, right. free speech, but, like...
The bot networks.
Are bot networks free speech?
They shouldn't be, but that's going to be an interesting argument.
It's like, my freedom of speech extends to the robots I pay to speak for me.
And it, you know, bot networks, I mean, my biggest problem with bot networks is also my biggest problem with fucking Bitcoin, is that it's a useless expenditure of energy as we're burning our planet to a crisp. We don't need to have computers just sitting around thinking and telling us how to and try to influence other people's opinions.
Totally agree. Because, like, okay, so the internet was created, and, you know, we were told, it's this way we'll all have a voice. And turns out we all have a voice, yes, but we're being drowned out by the computer itself.
Right, by the people who can have more voice.
Yeah, or select people who are harnessing the power of... Yeah, it's like, oh god, it's so frustrating. This fucking optimism, utopian spirit we had for this stuff. And it's just
so naive. If anything, I wish I could go back to tell, like, 16-year-old me how terrible the internet was going to be, even though I was bright-eyed and optimistic at the time.
Yeah, man, it just honestly, like, it. I think it comes down to, I think it's just terrible preparation, you know, building the, not physical infrastructure, but the societal infrastructure. Which you have to, you can't be too handsy about, right? Because, you know, you can't, we have freedom of speech and all. But then also...
Like, the scales are tilted because, like, commercial interests are way more powerful than, like, any non-profit even.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, yeah, so along those lines, there also just seems to be the people doing it were doing things poor. I mean, like, fucking Zuckerberg. More shit came out about him this week.
What did he do now?
I can't even remember off the top of my head, but it's like someone unearthed records of, like, just, like, a harassment campaign. I don't know.
What did he do?
Look into it. I think it was a Times or someone broke it. But
reportedly mulled 100 deals with developers to decide real market value of user data. Holy hell, dude. What the fuck? Fuck.
Okay, that was one... Yeah, there was actually another thing that came out. Dude's awful. But so, but what you're saying, that how the commercial interests have more power, it's like, the problem with the internet has nothing to do with the internet.
No.
These are problems we've been dealing... It's like, if the internet would have happened in, like, the 50s...
Jesus.
Like, before... I mean, I know the 50s have, like, this conservative make America great again.
Yeah, can you imagine what McCarthy would have allowed on the internet if you were in charge of what content was allowed to get pushed?
Okay, let's say 30s to make it more. I'm trying. What I mean is like a government infrastructure that was not groomed over decades to be as beneficial to centralized corporations as it is today.
Man, how far back do you need to go for that?
Well, if you go back a little further than the 30s, then you're hitting the 20s, which wasn't good. So, and then if you're going back even further, there's no such thing as a corporation.
What? That's exactly what the progressives were fighting in, like, the late 1800s.
Yeah, but all I mean is that if the business of the internet would have not been allowed or grew up in the current business atmosphere.
Right, if there were tighter controls on what people could buy over the internet.
Because, like, okay, so I think some people might look back on the rise of Silicon Valley and, you know, the other companies associated. Because there was, like, even amongst businesses, there was actually sort of an intentional hands-off so that they could grow. So that this could be, like, just a huge expanding life form of business and wealth and commerce for America. And that worked. Not in a good way, but it worked. But looking back, I could see how the people who advocated for that might say, oh, see, it worked. But I kind of look back and say, like, how was it not going to work? Like, think of as soon as people came up with these cool new things, people were jumping over fucking iPhones and apps and like, to think that this couldn't have been as successful if it went a little slower, a little more regulated, you know, codes of ethics instilled. Like, it still would have gotten big in everyone's life.
Sure, but we have to consider, like, how many small companies, like, individual ideas that may have been brilliant were just been shut out because they can't get to scale.
Yeah. Scale became, yeah. Especially today. It's scale
because it's like, you have to, like, apparently have monopolies or monopsonies over entire countries or jurisdictions to be successful at economic scale, which seems kind of counterintuitive.
God, I mean, I can even remember, what, maybe it's even 10 years ago now, where it's like, there were different places you watched videos online.
What, there was something besides YouTube?
Like, YouTube. What was that?
One.
There was one where, remember the one where there was like random, I mean, even, it didn't Hulu start as like something more open?
Mm-hmm. And then Youku and the Chinese versions, man, what a heyday of internet content that was.
Yeah, and you had to like know where to go places, and I think it's like once they were able to get technology of that sort into older people's lives, that scale thing shot up exponentially. Mm-hmm. Like the entry level scale thing. Because right, once the few big providers or content providers got to the old people, nothing else could break in really.
Right. And the problem with the buying patterns, especially older people, is that once it's that Hank Hill thing, once you have a so and so person, you go to that person for so and so.
Yeah. He's the propane guy on the show. Yeah.
So once you have your video content website, you go to that video content website, and that's how YouTube basically shut out everybody else.
Yeah, you know how it works. I mean,
it is easy, isn't it?
What was that?
It's easy, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and making things simple. I mean, by the way, like, I like how technology is way simpler to use than it was 15 years ago. I am happy about that. I think there are consequences that aren't good, and maybe I will be willing to trade that away. But
I feel like incomprehension is kind of lesser for it.
Oh, yeah, maybe. But like, just think of all the like, how many things are actually pretty much plug and play nowadays. Like it's beautiful. Really. It's like what the future. Like, that type of element of the future. I remember thinking, again, just as recently as 10 years ago or less, you know, as I'm trying to figure out. Remember how hard it was to set up the goddamn internet on things?
Or fuck, remember how you had to know what IRQs your computer was using to put on more peripherals?
You have to go find all these codes, and you have to know passwords for everything, and you have to spend hours downloading things or
praying it works.
and so many menus and settings, and you know, all that stuff's gotten better. And honestly, it's probably been quicker to that point because of centralization, consolidation of businesses and technologies, but it's there's just so many costs.
Too many costs our society is like apparently able to bear, but we shouldn't be willing to bear.
Yeah. I feel like I want to grab a pitchfork and mob Facebook until the government just bans it. Just right. Destroys it.
Like Facebook should be like different companies.
But on the other hand, I feel like that's a draconian, over-the-top, unlawful response. What's the middle ground?
Antitrust regulation and enforcement. Like, we don't even need to, like, write new laws. We can just use the same old laws and just be like, well, it looks like 90 to 96% of all advertising revenue is currently getting gobbled up by, like, three companies. So that's a problem.
Yeah. Now, I've only heard one 2020 candidate say that the how it's a investigatory prosecutorial issue, not a new law issue.
Yeah,
that's Klobuchar.
This is, oh man, good. I have to be heard.
I thought you would say that. I would not be surprised to hear others go in on that. I think they are all. Except for, like, Warren, who kind of went past that.
I mean, obviously, she's made her whole career about it, but that seems like low-hanging fruit for anybody trying to be successful in 2020.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like the only reason that they wouldn't is if they are trying to get money out of them, I think. Or they just are kind of... they don't like to do the right thing.
I don't know. It's hard to say. There's a couple of different reasons why somebody would be against that, but none of them are good, so whatever.
Yeah, and I feel like the reason execution of the law is the low-hanging part is because you're not arguing for some sort of, like, arguing for a new law. I mean, a lot of them are mundane and everyday. But, like, you know, advocating for a new law is kind of a big deal. You're saying this thing that was legal and notionally society deemed it fine to do is now not fine to do. Or if you got rid of a law, vice versa. And that's, kind of, you know, redefining a population's morality is a big deal. But if it's just an issue of, like, just prosecuting something that's already the law, putting resources into investigating what is already the law, it's lower. That's the low hanging part. Like, it doesn't feel like that should be difficult to do for a presidential candidate.
No, but it's difficult for the FBI to do, unfortunately, because more than half of their funding goes to national security investigations instead of, you know, financial crimes, which they're one of the agencies that's uniquely capable of doing those in-depth white-collar investigations. Because, like, you couldn't leave that up to even, like, the New York AG, because a lot of those crimes cross so many jurisdictions that it's difficult to investigate properly.
Yeah. You know, I think I may have brought this up last time we talked about social media and information warfare. I had heard an interview with a guy who runs a company that works for other companies, or, you know, he takes on other companies as clients, and he looks into bot network attacks on their company and kind of investigates them, isolates them, informs the company. Sounds like what? And it just interests me because I feel like he said like he's never taken on a client that hasn't been the victim of one of these bot network attacks. He's like there's never been a client that
like preemptively worried about it.
They've never looked into a company that hasn't had it happen to them. Not even just as clients. They've just never looked. Like, I was like shocked. And I'm like, not once. It was not once. And I think I even brought this up last time too. But like, this seems to. I feel like as we began the conversation, it seems as if there's campaigns or PACs or associated groups with candidates paying for attacks on other candidates. And I feel like this, like, that segment of the kind of, coming back to Mueller Report and investigating Trump and all that, I feel like that's going to be a reoccurring theme in political investigations over the next decade. Every single one is going to have something to do with using these anonymous, lifeless aspects of the internet to attack their enemies. Today's sunny, today's rain. Destroy the myth that will break our chains. Break your chains!